From Cheyenne to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly double dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but we're here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, a former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Good morning, Wyoming. Hope you're all doing well. It's a beautiful, wet, foggy day here in Cheyenne. I'm recording this on a Thursday, and I hope you're all well. So I took a little hiatus the last couple of weeks for Palm Sunday through Easter. It's one of my most favorite holidays. And of course, for Christians, it's one of the most important holidays on the Christian calendar. I hope you had a beautiful couple of weeks around Easter, and I hope you enjoyed it. So welcome to the show. There's been quite a bit of news happening in Wyoming, a lot of interesting stuff. I thought probably the first thing that we would touch upon is this reaction to a letter that was sent by a group of judges and lawyers across the state of Wyoming, asking our federal delegation to essentially stand up for the rule of law. This, of course, comes from what's happening federally, with the president deciding not to adhere to a Supreme Court decision stating that this man who was sent out of country that needs to be brought back to have a hearing. So here in Wyoming, there was a reaction to that in the form of this open letter to our federal delegation, and they have now responded. The original letter was, I think, 100 Wyoming attorneys and judges who called on the federal delegation to defend judges and the American rule of law, which I think, I would assume most of us would agree with this. The federal delegation wrote back through Senator Cynthia Lummis, who wrote an op-ed that was in the Cowboy State Daily. And it was an interesting piece. Right off the bat, I have to say that the very first sentence, however, is what I want to talk about and just maybe take us on a little historical journey, because I kind of take umbrage at something that was said. So Senator Lummis writes, "America's founding fathers established a carefully balanced system of government with three co-equal branches, each serving as a check on the other." Okay, end quote. You're probably thinking, wow, what would you disagree with that? Listen, I agree with all of that except the word co-equal, because the founding fathers never intended the three branches to be co-equal. And I think maybe we need to get to a definition to understand, because equal and co-equal are different. And at least in this sense of how they're being applied, and different from what the framers applied them or thought of them, okay? Equal, if I have four donuts and you have four donuts, then we have an equal amount of donuts and we're equal. And that's our breakfast, right? If I say that we have co-equal nutrition in our breakfast, however, but I have four donuts and you have oatmeal, fruit, and a glass of juice, they're not co-equal, okay? Or maybe, a better way to put it, and I've heard others put it this way, think of it as a kicker and a quarterback, equal members of a team, but they're not co-equal in their responsibilities, right? The quarterback is clearly more important to the team than the kicker. And so co-equal is not at all what the framers intended in terms of power in the branches. But that's how modern interpretations have come to spin the idea into our kind of vernacular. So let me read a little from a piece written by Jonah Goldberg in 2021 about this topic. He says, quote, "Richard Nixon must be having a good laugh. Until Watergate, the notion that the three branches of government were co-equal were considered far-fetched. This co-equal doctrine was largely an effort by the Nixon administration to keep congressional investigators at bay. The founders never imagined that the legislative, executive, and judicial branches were co-equals. Their intent, made plain in the structure of the Constitution, was for Congress to be supreme. That's why Article 1 is about Congress, literally the first branch, and its powers. Indeed, if you search through the Federalist Papers, the word co-equal appears only 8 times. Not once does it say that the three branches of the federal government are co-equal. They reserve that term to describe the standing of the federal government to the states or the relationship between the House and the Senate. So think about what the founders were most passionate about. Taxation without representation probably tops the list. Well, only Congress can tax. Indeed, all tax bills are supposed to start in the House because the House is directly elected by the people. And remember, at the time, senators were elected by the state's legislatures. So just remember that. Congress is the only branch of government with the power of the purse. It alone, at least according to the Constitution, can declare war. Also, in case you forget, it writes the laws, taxing, spending, declaring war, writing laws. That's Congress's responsibility. I ask you, what can Congress do that the other branches can't? Well, through impeachment, it can fire the president, vice president, or any member of the judiciary. Indeed, the exception, with the exception of the Supreme Court, it creates every other federal court. It also creates every federal agency and department. Everyone who works for Uncle Sam, except for the president and the vice president, has a job created by Congress. And their job, including for the most part the president, is to do with what Congress says. So as historian Jay Cost puts it, if I get to tell you what to do, but you don't get to tell me what to do, who is actually in charge? Recall that the founders were drawing on the English experiment and their own as colonists. They were partisans of Parliament, not the crown. Their biggest worry was that a president would become a new king, which is why they loaded up Congress with all of these powers. So my point is, Senator Lummis has it completely wrong. The three branches are not co-equal. They are absolutely not co-equal. Congress is superior. But what we have going on right now in the country is that Congress is not doing its job. And I've said this before, I will keep saying it again on repeat. They are not doing their job. Senator Lummis, Senator Brasso, and Representative Hageman need to be doing their job. Their job is not to be cheerleaders for the executive. Their job is to stand as a singular and superior branch of the government, effectively effecting a massive check to the unconstitutional inclinations of the other two branches, not co-equal with the other two branches. So, you know, as I read Senator Lummis's piece, the first thing that just really distracted me from the entire piece was that. Because, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm quibbling about it, but it is really important to understand why the branches aren't co-equal, so you don't join so many others in continuing to give away power rightly held in the Congress to other branches, a practice generally feared by our founding fathers. And it's particularly important when a senator is writing this, a United States senator from Wyoming is writing this and talking about co-equal branches as if she does not believe she has the power to do anything about these issues, which is just patently untrue. Sadly, they might as well be co-equal because the Congress is not doing its job. They've laid down most of their responsibilities and are just letting the executive have roughshod over everything, which I think maybe works in some sense, or they think it works, because it eliminates from them this idea that they have to take responsibility for some of these issues. They're really not taking responsibility for anything. But in reality, there's so much that they could be doing. I would argue, as have many others, that the country will get stronger again, and many of the ills of our government can be corrected when Congress starts doing its job. All of that is to say that I read this piece about this kerfluffle between the judges and some lawyers here in Wyoming and our federal delegation, where Senator Lummis continues on in the piece to talk about how much the president won his election by, this most recent election that he did indeed win, and that he won the popular vote. And she states these facts and figures. Now, I mean, he didn't win a huge mandate here. It was the 42nd biggest victory, so hardly a landslide, because the country's deeply split. I mean, I think that's obvious. But I understand her point. She goes on to basically say that the president has this win, and so therefore, if the president wants to do stuff, then the president can do stuff, and that liberal judges can't stand in his way. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, but I think you get the point. And it's frustrating because the problems that she's addressing or talking about here are problems, I don't know, she could address. the Congress could address. They could do things properly. They should properly be doing stuff. Now, as a conservative, the first thing I think anyone who reads this piece should do about it after reading it is this. Okay, I think you should take that piece and remove the words President Trump everywhere and insert President Kamala Harris. Then remove reference to liberal judges everywhere and put in conservative judges instead. Now reread it. Do you still agree with it? Because if you don't, then this argument, rightly understood, doesn't pass the test of the proper role of government. Because if you don't like the actions overriding judges when your opposition party does it, you shouldn't like it when your party does it either. It's just a partisan argument, and a bad one at that. It's not an argument based on the system of our government, regardless of who's in what branch, who's sitting in what seat. So if you can rewrite this piece, changing the names, and you still agree with it, then you're just flat wrong. And you either don't understand the rule of law, or you are choosing to ignore it, or ignore your own principles in the naked pursuit of power. I reread it with President Kamala Harris and conservative judges instead, and I disagree profoundly. I disagree profoundly with it as it is written as well. Okay, let's move on. As a conservative, I've spent a lot of time thinking about what is going on in the party, that we have, you know, an opinion piece by a United States Senator from Wyoming that is just so obviously wrong and misguided, and so directly opposite to convictions about the rule of law, the proper role of government, the proper role of the branches, that I personally think she probably has held in the past. And it leads me to this idea, and I've been kicking it around for a while, and so I'm going to kick it out here a little bit and talk about it. So I look at our politics, and I think that there's this coin, right? So I think of it in terms of a coin. So think about a coin, and I call it the coin of fear, because I believe that fear is the biggest motivating factor right now in our politics. And that's not a good thing. There's something really rotten right now at the core of our politics, and it's not just the usual swamp rot or anything like that. It's this fear. It's plain, unvarnished, power-chasing fear. And any good leader will tell you that fear is something you have to control in those you lead if you want to achieve your objectives, right? In the military, if you become a commander, if you lead troops into battle, you're taught about how to control fear in our soldiers, because it's so incredibly important to control and confront fear, because fear is just not a good thing when facing opposition. Sure, fear has its place in our human existence. You know, the fear of that hot stove, you learned that as a baby, right? And sometimes it saves us from ourselves, but it is not a good thing in our electorate. And let me explain why. So you have this coin, and if you flip that fear over, you'll find that it has two kinds of faces reacting in identical ways. On one side, I see Republicans who cheer this populism and this kind of cult of personality and blindly follow that. They are willing to step away from many convictions that many have previously held to do that, to just blindly cheer this cult of personality. And on the other side, you see Republicans running from the chaos straight into the arms of the opposition, abandoning principle in the process. So it's the same coin with identical reactions following two different scripts. So let's take that first side first, the one that I think really has been the loudest right now. These are the MAGA Republicans who once stood tall for the Constitution, believed in limited government, believed in the dignity of the individual, right? That people are made in the image of God, and believed in moral responsibility and moral uprightness in our leaders. But now they've traded so much of that for this kind of blind loyalty to one person and one movement. And they justify every single breach of principle because they're terrified of losing favor, losing power, or just losing their next primary. And so it's fear-based. And it's fear-based that drives them to basically just jettison principle after principle after principle and make excuses for that removal. Then you flip the coin over, and the reaction is just as telling, because there are Republicans who see what's happening in the party, and instead of standing their ground and reclaiming it, they abandon it altogether out of fear, fear of the base, fear of the conflict, fear of being seen as complicit. They bolt. They trade their long-standing convictions for applause from people who never shared those convictions in the first place. And here's the truth. Neither side wants to hear this. Neither side wants to hear it. They both believe they're the true patriots. But in reality, they're both motivated by fear. One wants to cling to power. The other runs from the fight. But neither is truly leading. And I have to ask myself, look, I've just thought about this and thought about it because it's very similar. Both sides are very, very similar. The main thing that they have in common is this losing of principles, this walking away from principles. And I had to ask myself, look, what's missing? Or maybe what's motivating? And what's motivating and what's missing, I mean, this might sound unsophisticated to some people, but what's missing is courage. I mean, it's truly courage that is missing and that could motivate. And I know that people will say in politics, don't look for courage, you know, don't look for courage. You're not going to find it. But that's just not true, right? Because there's just a long history of courageous leaders in our past. And what's missing is courage. I mean, I'm a huge, you know, reader of history, and I love it so much. And I think it gives you that perspective that you need, you really have to have. And we're missing courage. So let's talk about courage, real historical courage. It's easy to forget that our party, the Republican Party, was led once by men and women who stood against the Soviet Union, not just with military might, but with a real sense of moral clarity. Republicans who knew communism was evil and who said so repeatedly again and again and again, and talked about courage and talked about freedom. These Republicans who faced down the Iron Curtain, and not just with the missiles and the policy stuff, but with their unwavering belief in liberty. Courage wasn't some kind of campaign slogan. It was a requirement. And of course, you know, I'm talking about Reagan. That kind of courage is just so important. Think of Reagan at the Brandenburg Gate, right? Telling Gorbachev to tear down this wall. Think of Goldwater standing for freedom, even when it made him unpopular, and standing against Nixon because he knew it was the right thing to do, not the partisan thing. He said, I'm not going to defend the indefensible. That's courage, man. That's real courage, and it is profoundly lacking in our politics today. Think about these cold warriors like Goldwater and Chase Smith and Vandenberg in Congress, who knew their votes could put them at political risk, but they cast them anyway, because America's moral compass was more important than one election. That is real courage. And now this time, the time that we're living in, it's asking for this kind of courage again. You know, I'm asking for it this time. Let's be honest. It's not the Berlin Wall. We're not facing an outside adversary. We are facing an adversary in our own party, this party that is so morally confused and it's struggling. And I think the way back from that struggle, the way back is courage. I'm going to take political and personal courage and use it, because that's what it's going to take to find our way back. I mean, obviously, this is not like life and death stuff, right? And when I talk about fear, I'm sure you understand, I do not mean bodily harm. This isn't like a nuclear standoff that threatens the entire world, the planet. This is standing up in a town hall and saying, no, I will not sell out the Constitution to win a seat or to curry favor or to become popular among sellouts. Okay? This is having the courage to tell your fellow Republicans, I will not throw away conservative principles because I'm afraid of being shouted down online or elsewhere. This is the courage to lead within our own house, this Republican house, but not to burn it down, not to abandon it, but to clean it up. And I know this is hard. I mean, we see it. I see the nastiness online. I mean, if you're here in Wyoming and you spend time on Facebook, you see all these groups on Facebook, and they're just nasty. I mean, they're just terrible people, right? I think some of them aren't even, I mean, I know some of them are not even from Wyoming. There's some groups out there that have the name Wyoming in the title, but you look and the main people who are posting, and I mean posting like it is their freaking job. I mean, they're posting 20 times a day. Don't have any kind of significant profile, or if they do, it's not from Wyoming. think some of them might even be bots. But they're still nasty and people still see it. When I talk about the folks on that side of the coin that have just abandoned principles for this kind of blind loyalty, I'm talking about people who maybe at one time, and some of them that are people we know that have turned nasty, some of them espouse their Christians. And maybe at one time they truly believed that every human being is born in the image of God and has dignity. But you would not believe that they believe that anymore from the way that they act, from the way that they treat people online, from the things that they say, the sick jokes they have about people, the nasty cartoons. You would not believe it. They certainly aren't walking that walk anymore. And it's childish, right? It's juvenile. It's ugly. The courage we must have is to lead our party out of that and clean it up. So there's a great quote Margaret Thatcher has, and I was thinking about this a while back. She has this quote, and I was thinking about it and thinking, does this work in this conversation about the coin of fear and then about courage? You know, there's two sides of the coin, and they're basically the same thing, and fear is the common denominator that makes people jettison their principles, right? Whether you're running, you know, to the Democrat Party and you're asking for applause or from people who'd never shared your convictions, or you're on the other side jettisoning rules of law, jettisoning due process, making excuses for all these transgressions because you're fearful and you just have nothing but blind loyalty and you want to maintain power, whatever, no matter the cost, right? But Margaret Thatcher has this great quote, and I think it does work. She says, "All my life I have stood against banning communism or other extremist organizations, because if you do that, they go underground and it gives them an excitement that they don't get if they're allowed to pursue their policies openly. We will beat them on the ground, on the argument." I love that quote. And it's that last part. I love the whole thing, but it's that last part that I think works in this, because that's courage, man. That's courage, right? We will beat them on the ground on the arguments. And that's what has to be done. That's the courage that has to be found. It's the courage we all have to have as Republican voters in our state, in this state of Wyoming that we all love so much. We have to have the courage to stand our ground and to beat them on the ground on the arguments, because our arguments are worthy and they're right. They're true and just. The Constitution is worth fighting for in every possible way. These arguments are worth having and having politely. If you've got a neighbor that just loved Cynthia's article and thought it was great, offer them the opportunity to edit it. Tell them and say, you know, just edit it. Go change the names, right? Like I said earlier, change those names, take out President Trump, put in President Kamala Harris, take out liberal judge, put in conservative judge. Now read it again and think about it. Do you still agree? Because I know you don't, and I know you wouldn't. You're only agreeing because it's a partisan argument she's trying to press the advantage with to hold on to power. And that's not American. And using salacious issues, and maybe, I mean, I shouldn't even say salacious, using issues that are profoundly important, right? Illegal immigration and acts of violence against Americans. These are important issues. But the argument is purely a partisan one. So I love this idea. We'll beat them on the ground on the arguments. We just don't need any more fear-driven politics. We need leaders who fight. Not like playground bullies, not like playground bullies. We've gotten way too many of those, right? I want to see what I love, and what I love about history is reading about statesmen and women who actually remember what it means to be a statesman. I want to see more of that. That's what I want. I want to see more people who can think through issues clearly, that aren't just working on sound bites, who aren't, you know, just trying to make chase headlines. They really care about the issues and they care about how they're going to affect people in their community from the top to the bottom. So I feel like the time for fear has passed, and it's courage. Really, it's truly courage or collapse. There's no other third option for the Republican Party. We have got to find courage. So choose courage, because history is watching. And every day that we're here, we're making history. And frankly, the bar for bravery isn't as high as it used to be. So what's stopping us, right? What's stopping you? We're not facing down the Soviet Union and nuclear destruction. We're facing down a bunch of loudmouth bullies and ugly people who do not have a real understanding of what it means to be a Republican or even a conservative. Sure, they can be nasty. I've been to the meetings. I've been in Republican meetings. I've listened to people screaming at other people, calling them a bunch of rhinos. Boo-hoo. Boo-hoo. We need to have courage. We need to have courage to speak the truth to these people, right? And just remember who you are. I tell myself this. I am a conservative. In the list of things in my life, I am a Christian. I'm an American. I'm a Republican. And I'm an American before I'm a Republican. The Constitution is more important than anything else. This American way of life, as Reagan said, there's nowhere else to go. If we ruin this here, there's nowhere else to retreat to. So we better figure it out here. And this party that we all love, the party that I'm in, the Republican Party, it needs help. And it's going to take courage to have that. It's going to take courage and never ceding. I'm a conservative. I'm a limited government, pro-life, pro-family, pro-parental rights, pro-constitution, pro-due process, Republican, in the finest tradition of classical liberalism that created this country. That's what I am. And if you don't know what classical liberalism is, go look it up. Read some books, understand it, and understand why it's so important. Because freedom is messy, man. Freedom is messy, and it's scary to people who are living in fear and are fear-based. And I think that's where we're at. They want to control. They want to put their thumb on the scale. They want to throw away principles of limited government. They want to throw away principles of local control. They want to dictate to people because they're in fear, because freedom is messy. It takes people who are courageous to live in this messy freedom that is our country. So this coin of fear, we have to get rid of it. And we're only going to get rid of it if we have courage together. So I just want to say to those of you out there listening, have courage. Have that conversation. Be polite, be thoughtful, but have the conversations. If you don't feel like you understand the issues, you can shoot me an email. You can ask somebody you know and trust. Spend some time reading history. Understand about our government. Understand where it comes from. I value being a Republican because I believe in our historic principles wholeheartedly because they work. We've seen them work and we know they work. And I want to have those discussions. We need to stand and fight and be rid of this coin of fear. So that's my diatribe. And I'm sorry that y'all had to listen to that. I wanted to get it out. I wanted to talk about it because I've been thinking about it for a while. I've written several pieces, just kind of working through the machinations about the ideas of fear, because fear really is the common denominator in our politics. Everywhere we see fear. So let's work together against that fear. I really hope that we all start thinking about this idea of the coin of fear on the two sides. And instead of thinking that you need to be on one side or the other, find the courage to toss the coin away, throw it in the trash, have the courage to stand and fight for this grand old party. I know I will. As a conservative, I'm going to fight for those conservative things I believe in, of course, but I'm also fighting for the health of the entire Republican Party. And I really believe the only way we're going to get rid of that coin of fear is through courage. So my thought for you as we leave and you go out and enjoy the rest of this glorious week here in beautiful Wyoming, as spring is coming, yay, courage. Read about courage. Find some beautiful quotes about courage. Some of the greatest Republicans and conservative leaders across the planet talk about courage. One of my favorite quotes is by Sir Winston Churchill. As you know, he's my favorite. As you probably know, I've read every possible thing I can read about him and things he himself has written. Churchill said, "Courage is rightly esteemed the first of human qualities because it is the quality which guarantees all the others." Think about that. Courage is rightly esteemed the first of human qualities because it is the quality which guarantees all others. He's right. So think about courage for a while. Think about what it would take to be really courageous, to stand in that courage, to speak truth, to argue ideas and not personalities, idea for idea, to refuse to be moved or motivated out of fear, and to encourage everyone else to do the same. Encourage your friends. Go to the county party meetings. Encourage your members not to be motivated by fear. All right, folks, have a great weekend.